Rob LeBritz is the director of golf at Glen Arbor in New York. He is an incredible golfer, incredible teaching pro. He's played in 8 majors, not tournaments, majors. He was the highest ranking teaching pro at Bethpage in 2019 at the PGA. He's won 3 tournaments already this year, 2021, summer of. He's going to go to Q School in the fall for the Champions Tour. Incredible work ethic. We have a mutual friend that we've known for a long time. In my conversation, we talk about the state of golf. We talk about the PGA and the USGA. He also gives great, great advice on just how to approach the game when you play. He talks about par threes, there's 1X. Excuse me. On par threes, there's 1X. On par fours, there's 2X. On par fives, there's 3Xs and what to do. He talks about kind of the 40-second rule where he hits it and then doesn't think about it until he gets up there and has 40 seconds to hit the next one. I mean, he's just very, very, very methodical, very disciplined, his approaches to golf. Really great conversation. I know you're going to like it. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Joey Pins. People ask me, how did I lose 130 pounds? The quick answer is always discipline. I started my business, wasn't paying attention to my health, was eating too much, drinking too much sweets. My daughter was born. Next thing I know, I'm pre-diabetic, I have hypertension. I knew something had to change. Discipline. I, like many of you, have faced many challenges in your career, in your family, in your life, in your faith. How did you attack them? How did you approach them? How did you solve them, hopefully? It all had to have some degree of discipline. I'm also asked, how did you found and start a tech business that lasted over 25 years? Discipline. I was committed to it, enjoyed technology, didn't enjoy some aspects of it, but knew it was necessary. Discipline. Our podcast mission, how do we use discipline to better ourselves and society? Join me, please, as I talk to interesting people and discuss how they use discipline in their family and their passion and their careers and how it helped them. Our podcast vision, growth through learning from others. Joey Pins Discipline Conversations. It'll be light and serious. Join us, please. Thank you for consideration. Oh, man. So it's so great to see you. What a year you're having. Oh, my goodness. How old are you now?
Just turned 50. Yeah. Crazy. Half century mark.
Unbelievable.
And, not unbelievable. Just been preparing and getting ready and doing things, for years to prepare for Champions Tour and get ready for this. So, yeah.
When does Champions Tour start? How does that work?
U School starts in November. November 16th through 19th. And then the finals are December, first week in December at TPC Tampa Bay. And I've got one sponsor's invite waiting for me in February. To the Chubb down in Naples, and it's been a good run so far. I'm working hard on my game and my body and all that good stuff. It's all good.
I didn't realize there's a Q School for Champions Tour as well.
Oh yeah. It's only 5 cards and 30 associate cards, which gets you into the Tuesday qualifier. So you don't have to do pre-qualifying and all that stuff. So,
wow. Now the TPC Tampa Bay has been through some hard times.
TPC has it? I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't played it in a while, but I heard it has, but I heard it's getting better. How is golf? How is the state of golf, Rob LeBritz, in your opinion, right now?
State of golf's great. We're in a bull market. Yeah, it's especially up here in the Northeast. I mean, besides Hurricane Ida hitting us and dumping 7 inches on us last night, we're in a bull market. It's great. Lessons are crazy. People are joining clubs. You can't find enough people or clubs for all these people to join. So at least up here, it's good.
Yeah, I would think that's the case everywhere. Even, I'm just a little more north of you in New Haven, but my club for the first time in 20 years has got a waiting list. It's absolutely incredible. But people aren't watching. Viewership is down. Why is that?
This golf's boring to watch on TV. Yeah. I mean, come on, right? You want to watch a football game? You want to watch a guy hit a golf ball in a hole?
Yeah, I think you're right. And there's no real big names. You and I can certainly rattle off the top well, we'd know everybody, but you know, if I ask my girlfriend, she'd have to say, oh, that one guy from Ireland and that other, you know, she'd have to kind of, so I don't know if there's any kind of big personalities, although what's happening now with, you know, DeChambeau and some of the other players is certainly causing a little bit of a stir.
I mean, if you want to get into these guys' personal stirs, feel free. I just, you know, it's just drama to me. It's noise. You know, leave these guys alone. Let them do their jobs. And, you know, they're going to go out there and make birdies, watch them make birdies, but don't get caught up in all the other stuff with the, you know, the name calling and I, you know, whatever. I have no time for that.
I agree. I agree. Now, Rob, what's the difference between the PGA, the PGA Tour, and the USGA?
So the PGA of America, the PGA Tour, and the USGA, yes. Three different governing bodies. PGA of America runs golf clubs, club professionals, 30,000 of us, you know, worldwide. We're the ones who are running your golf clubs, taking care of your member guests, doing all your things. The PGA Tour are the guys that you watch on TV, you know, the Brooks Koepkas, the guys that you want to see, the Tiger Woodses, the Phil Mickelsons, all these guys. And then the USGA is the governing body of amateur golf, basically. And they also run the U.S. Open, and you know, so it's three different associations, three different views. Then they also run, so you got the USGA, the PGA of America, and then the PGA Tour. They, you know, the PGA Tour has the Tour Championship. We have the PGA Championship, and then the USGA has the U.S. Open, and then the Masters is the other, you know, major. So there's four different governing bodies that run events, and they're great, great across the board for all of us.
But the USGA kind of makes the rules, correct?
Yeah, they govern the rules. The rules of golf is the USGA. They govern that. They also run events. So,
and the PGA decides which rules they like and or which rules they're not going to listen to. There's like a little bit of a conflict there sometimes.
I mean, they've started with the long putters and stuff like that. But you know, we're trying to make the game friendly for everybody. We don't want to exclude anybody. We want everybody included. You know. Just any type of person to play golf. That's what we want. So, you know, we don't, if you hit it in the hole with a long putter, great. If you hit it in the hole with a short putter, great. If you hit it in the hole with a, you know, we don't care. We just want you to go out there and have fun and enjoy yourself on the golf course.
And what does the PGA need to do in order to get more? Well, I guess we don't need any more playing. There's so many playing. I guess it's more watching. What do they need to do?
In my opinion, well, I'm not a marketer. I'm a player and teacher.
Yes,
but
you certainly are.
You know, for me, what do they got to do? You know, again, golf's inherently boring when you're watching on TV. It really is. I mean, you know, they're going to show some great swings and great shots and balls sucking in the hole and, you know, guys making putts. But ultimately, you know, golfers have to stay pretty low key. You know, you don't want your emotions going all over the place. You want to stay pretty level. So, you know, most of those guys are pretty level. You know, back in the day when Tiger had some flair, you know, people caught on to it, and then he won everything. So, I mean, he was like the needle. You know, hope he comes back and heals up and gets to play again. But, you know, you got guys like Phil Mickelson winning the PGA Championship. That's great. We need stuff like that. We just need storyboards, you know. It's great that, you know, great swingers like Patrick Cantlay can win an event. But, you know, a lot of guys, you know, my wife doesn't even know who Patrick Cantlay is. And, you know, she's married to a golf professional. So and here he is, one of the greatest players on the planet.
Absolutely.
So it's just interesting. You know, it's interesting. Yeah, we don't have a star-studded athlete that sticks out like everybody. We have a few that are making some noise, and a few that are getting injured. But it seems like we need a good little, you know, song hero coming up. We need something, some guy to come up and just, like, be out of the norm and be a nice guy and, you know, start winning events and gals. And then, you know?
Yeah, huh? that's a tall order.
It is. Although, you know, it's global now, so you're going to get some of that. You're going to get bigger, stronger athletes playing golf and hitting it farther and, you know, shooting lower. And yeah, sure. It's going to change like every sport does.
I mean, even in the Olympics, I mean, Rory Sabatini getting the bronze. I didn't even know he was still playing. I mean, some of these guys are so good, and there were so many names there I didn't even recognize, but they're really good golfers.
Yeah, they're coming out of their own respective countries, you know. They're number one, two, and three in those countries, so. That's what they're doing. And then they all try to chase the PGA Tour or European Tour, but PGA Tour is where the guys want to end up.
Now, as director of golf, is your status professional or amateur?
No, professional. Yeah, I've been a professional since 1991. Make money with my sticks, make money coaching the game, and and you know, helping them run a club here. So it's been a fun ride here at Glen Arbor for 21 years.
So in 2019, when you were highest at the there in Bethpage, my goodness, Rob, I watched you on television. It was, oh man, and you were highest ranking amateur, though, correct?
No low club professional. So oh, low professional. Great. There's no amateurs playing in the PGA. That's the Professional Golfers Association. So I'm a member of the association. It's our tournament, but there's 20 club pros that get to qualify for the PGA Championship every year. And since I became a PGA member in 2000, I've qualified for 8 PGA championships, including the last 3. So I'm getting better with age. Made 2 cuts, and then you know, we get to share in the purse when we make the cut. My finish has been around tied for 60th, so you're only making about $20,000. You're not finishing first, or you're making the $2 million, which would pay for a lot more groceries.
Yeah, it's hard to make a living. Now, you've already won 3 tournaments this year, Rob. Incredible.
Yeah, won the Massachusetts Open a few weeks back, and then the Met Professional Championship, and then we hosted the Westchester Open here at Glen Arbor again, another 3-round event, and I won that one. So been having some good results. Just finished 12th in the Met Open. We just had the Met Senior Open, finished 3rd there. But every tournament that I'm playing in, I'm gearing up for, you know, Champions Tour Q School at the end of the year, which will get me, you know, just I keep shooting under par. Just want all my rounds to be at live under par. You live under par, you're going to make some money. So I'm getting better with age. I'm getting more confident, more calm, and just settled. And things are, you know, just falling into place. So it's a nice feeling.
Yeah, it must be. What's more important, birdies or bogey avoidance?
Birdies.
Really?
Birdies. Not birdies. You know, birdies. I mean, you know, it all averages out. I mean, if you have 8 birdies and 8 bogeys, it's like making, you know, 8 pars. So it doesn't really, you know. But, yeah, birdies kind of just, you know, you get 2-3 under, you know, 4-5 under, 6 under. You know, you're going to hopefully make more birdies than bogeys. That's what we're trying to do. At a professional level, you're not going to be making a lot of mistakes. We're trying not to, you know. At the amateur level, they make a lot of birdies and they make a lot of mistakes, but we try to limit our mistakes and make a lot of birdies.
So when you're approaching a hole, let's say it's a mid handicap hole, are you thinking I'm going to birdie this bad boy? Are you thinking that? What are you thinking? Like right on the tee box?
So I'm on tee box. I'm on a long hole. I never think about toughness or difficulty. Every hole, par 3 has one area on a par 3 where you're going to have an X where you don't want to hit it. Okay. Hmm. Par 4s have 2 shots where you're going to have an X where you don't want to hit it. Par 5s have 3 shots where you're going to have an X where you don't want to hit it. So what you're trying to do is you're trying, you know, I don't ever think about a hole or round. I think about the shot that I'm about to hit. And I have 40 seconds to hit that shot. I hit that shot within 40 seconds. As soon as that ball lands, I forget about it. I'm walking down the fairway. I'm talking to the crowd. I'm talking to my caddy. I'm talking to my playing partners. Looking around, I'm thinking about other things, but I'm not thinking about golf because I want to get up to that next shot, take my 40 seconds, assess the situation, the lie, the wind, the blah, the yardage, all that stuff that we do, and then hit the shot, and then I'm done with it. I want to go talk to somebody. I want to hang out because who can focus for 5 hours? I want to forget about it right away, and I want to hit it, and I want to live in the moment, and that's how you play great golf. You don't get yourself too far in front, too far behind. You just live in the moment, and that's the way you should play.
Wow, that's tremendous advice. Now, when you say there's one X on a par 3, so you mean on the green, you want to, this is where you want to avoid or you want to hit?
Yeah, X is bad. So you want, there's one area that generally, you know, you got one side of the hole, it's generally going to be an X. We call it an X. It's the place you don't want to miss it. You don't want to hit it. So you kind of look at that area, you say, okay, I don't want to go there, and you avoid that. If people go into those areas, that's when they make big numbers or bogeys or stuff like that. But that's, you know, kind of, you know, elementary to think, but that's the way that golf courses are laid out.
It's fascinating because when you say Phil, when he won that, you know, when he won it at Kiowa there, we could hear his conversation with his caddy, and it was really all about, you know, you can't hit it here. So you're lining up on a par 5, so there's 4 X's. So you're thinking in that fairway, I'm not landing it here. That's it. You're not saying I want to put it here. There's the X. Avoid that. Take your 40 seconds and then think about something else until you get to the next shot.
So as a professional, you know how to control your golf ball. Okay. I mean, some shots get away from you, but you know how to control your golf ball. So you're not looking at that X area saying, oh my God, I got to avoid that. As soon as you just mention that to yourself, you know not to go there. So that's going to dictate the type of shot that you're going to hit. Hmm. And that shot is generally going to be peeling away from that trouble, or, you know, depending on the wind, maybe toward the trouble, but you're not thinking about the X. You just know not to go there. And then you focus on the spot you want to hit it, and then you hit it there. You're never putting any negative thoughts in your head, but just knowing that there's places that you don't want to hit it, then you just, once you get up to the tee, it's like you get on 15 at Glen Arbor, it's par five, the tee ball is down the left-hand side is all water, okay? So that's your X point, right? Hmm. You don't want to hit it left. You can hit it in the 13th fairway way to the right and still make a birdie, but you don't want to hit it left. So figure it out from there.
Wow. Wow. That's really, really good. And now I'm thinking about my rounds now. That's tremendous advice. Now, have you ever played Augusta?
I have.
Tell me what that experience was like.
It was great. It was, stayed overnight, played 36 holes, did the par three, had a great meal. Wow. Great hosts. Pretty awesome. Awesome spot.
You played 36 holes there. That's incredible.
2 days in a row. Yeah. Well, you know, 18 one day with the par three, and then 18 the next day. Stay in the cabins. It was a cool experience. Yeah, that place is absolutely special. Anytime anybody wants to invite me back, happy to come. I will bring all the greatest wine that you want to drink, and we'll have a great round out there. And you might even learn something. Any of those Augusta members.
Is it true there's only one set of tees?
No, they have other sets of tees. I played all the way back. I basically played 1 foot in the rough all the way back both times I played it, just to see what it was like. And I shot 70, 75. It was in November. It wasn't very fast. It was a little softer, but it was a great experience.
Wow.
Yeah, so really cool.
Very, very cool. Are green sheets fair?
Of course. Are they nappy?
As an amateur, we never get to use them, I guess.
You're talking about the green books that you're using on the tour?
I'm sorry. I'm talking about the ones that show all the undulation of the green.
So that would be the green books that they use on the tour with the arrows and all the, you know, right, heat mapping and all this stuff. Yeah, is it fair? Sure. It's just giving you information that you could already feel in your feet. It's giving you a solid, idea of what it is. You still got to pull the trigger, though.
Now, next year, they're not going to have them. Do I have that right?
I don't know. Maybe not. I've heard some talking about it, but until it happens, I'm not. I don't know.
And how about the addition of the GPS? I guess Phil Mickelson used it there in that major. I guess they're thinking about introducing it, but without the slope.
So you can use, it's not a GPS. It's a laser. It's just a laser yardage. A laser. Yeah. So you can shoot that in the practice rounds. We were able to use it. Were we able to use it at Kiowa this year? I think we were. I think we were, to be honest with you. But yeah, I mean, it just, you know, it's just easier for the guys out there. It's pretty cool because you can shoot it and then you might walk yourself off, do your normal paces after. It's just a confirmation, you know. I made my caddy do both. So he shot it, but then he also walked it off so he would get used to it, because there's other events you can't use it.
Hmm. That's really interesting to see how that goes. How important is the caddy, Rob? Tell me the life of the caddy and how important that role is and how important the relationship is with you and him.
Yeah, I mean, of course it's important. He's your friend. He's your, I've been with my caddy 12 years now. His name's Todd Luigi. He's been with me through thick and thin, never shows up late. Never says the wrong thing. He knows my yardages. Don't use him much for the greens. Last week we played Hudson National in the Met Open, or the week prior, and it was really hot. And unfortunately he couldn't make the last 9 holes. Because it was 98 degrees and he was looping. So I had to pull somebody out of the crowd, which was cool. But that was the first time that's ever happened with him. And, we chatted about it. But it's important. You know, he's there. He's your companion. He's the guy who's going to talk to you in between shots. And, you know, he's an integral part of making sure that your yardages are correct.
Yeah, it's important to note that he's not your coach. He's your caddy.
No, he's not my coach. I have other coaches. He's my caddy. He's my looper. Yep.
Yeah, I'm not sure if some of the amateurs realize that he is like getting your distances and you're kind of bouncing ideas off of him. I mean, do you go over every shot with him?
No, he gives me a number. I look at, he gives me a number to the hole, to the front edge and the back edge, sometimes to the middle if I need it. Any sort of mounds on the green if the hole is back. And then it's up to me to ultimately just pull the trigger. I mean, I might, you know, say I'm in between something and you know, he might give me his opinion. But other than that, you know, he's been with me 12 years, so he sees how I hit the ball, especially under pressure. So, yeah, integral part.
It's very interesting. And you've got to – we see some of the pros kind of go through them a little bit. I know – I think Patrick Cantlay recently got Tiger's old caddy, if I'm not mistaken.
And, Joe LaCava.
Yeah, LaCava. Nice. Yeah, and it's just very interesting, that relationship. We don't see it in many other sports where you have somebody there like that. And is it fair – now you're going to the Champions Tour. Is it fair the way Q School is set up? I know a young man who tried to make it – in fact, you met Raz Mekong. I brought him up to Glen Arbor a couple of years ago where he did really well the first 2 days and didn't do well the third round. It's very tough. It's expensive. Do you think it's fair the way that's set up?
Do I think it's fair? How would you say fair for letting guys come in the tour?
Yeah.
Come in the tour? Well, I mean, they don't want guys like me in the tour. You got to earn your spot there. Well, because I was never a full-time player on the tour. You got to work your way out there. I mean, they only give 5 cards. It's a hard card to get. Do I say it's fair or not? No, you just got to play well. And if, you know what, sooner or later, you're going to get into an event anyway. If you get into an event, you're good enough. You can finish in the top 10. You can win. You can do whatever you got to do to make it happen. I think they have so many guys coming off the PGA Tour that it's just a feeding avenue from, you know, the PGA Tour. The guys are coming into the Champions Tour. It's 3 rounds, no cut, guaranteed money for these guys and starts in $1 to $3 million events. So why would they want to open it up for the floodgates for the regular guy to get in? You know? They want to keep it kind of a, you know, their tour stop. But you have a lot of hungry guys like me. And, you know, back in the past, you got guys like Jim Albus and Lonnie Nielsen and a lot of great players, club pros that came out of the club pro ranks that had great Champions Tour careers. So that's, you know, what I'm going to try to do.
That's very interesting. I never thought of that.
But on the other side of it, I don't ever want to lose my PGA of America status. So, you know, here's where it gets a little bit, you know, sort of back and forth. With my PGA of America status, I get to play in the PGA National Professional Championship. I get to play in the senior now, being 50, PGA National Senior Professional Championship, which leads me into the PGA Championship and also leads me into the Senior PGA Championship. As you play in more Champions Tour events and sanctioned events on other tours, you after you play 9 events, I think it is, you lose your club pro status. You became a full-time player. So I don't want to lose my club pro status unless, you know, say things go, you know, very well and I start making, you know, a ton of money, a ton of wins out there in Champions Tour, which, you know, you built up in your brain to do because you want that to happen. Sure. You just got to cross that bridge when you come to it. But for me, I want to stay under that number so I can compete in both divisions. I'm a PGA club pro, you know, I wear it through and through and I'm proud member of the PGA of America. Yeah.
Yeah. You have great videos on your Instagram where you show your students swing. You've got great tips. Really great content that you have there, but that's interesting. That delicate line that you're going to have to balance between PGA of America. How difficult for people who don't know, how difficult is it for someone to become a teaching pro like yourself?
How difficult? Well, so to become, if you want to come out and teach golf and say you understand golf, I could tell everybody that I'm the greatest tennis professional instructor that you want to be. And people want to come take lessons from me and they feel like I'm helping them. That's one thing. Now I don't know anything about tennis. Okay. But you know, so how difficult is it to become a PGA of America member? You have to go through some studies. It's about a 3-year program. You have to work at a couple different types of places. You have to earn credits to go towards membership, and then you have to pass a few tests and do some book work. It's a pretty drawn out process for 3 to 4 years. Kids are doing it now, going through college. They're going through PGM, professional golf management programs, and they're coming out of college with a college degree and a PGA membership. Which is a pretty cool thing. And they're coming in to help run some of the clubs. But is it difficult? No. You have to pass a playing ability test. So you have to shoot somewhere around, it's like 155 or 150 for 36 holes, which sometimes people have a problem doing.
Yeah.
I think they should make it harder, in my opinion. I think you should have to shoot even par to do it. But I understand that, you know, some people aren't great players and they're good managers. But there's still a baseline, which is, you know, around 155. And then you get all that book work done, pass all your tests and, you know, work for different pros and you create enough credits to become a member. Again, it's like a 4-year process, 3 to 4 year process. So is it difficult? Yeah, it's a lot of work. But like anything, you know, it's worth doing because at the end of the light, at the end of the tunnel, you got the light, right?
Right.
It's like studying for a series 6 or a series 7. And sooner or later, you're going to, you know, start making money off that series 6 or series 7, you know, when you get in and become a wealth manager. So sort of same thing.
And how much of that studying is the rules of golf versus running a pro shop or just running a course or running tournaments?
All of it. All of it's inclusive. You have agronomy, you have running tournaments, you have cart fleet management, you have food and beverage, you have general management, you have playing, you have teaching. You've got to know all those areas and pass tests in all the areas to become proficient to become a PGA member.
Very, very interesting. And yeah, because oftentimes I know we've had the same pro for 18 years and, you know, we all love him and he does a great job, Steve Berkmeyer. And it's fascinating. I didn't know it was that an exhaustive of a program to become that. That's really incredible. Would you, if you were in charge, would you keep it that way? Other than lowering, going under par, what changes would you make?
So, yeah, I mean, I would definitely change the playing ability portion of it. It's pretty current. You know, there's a lot of different types of facilities out there. So each facility runs a little differently. It's not as cookie cutter as they make it. So, you know, I would make sure that people had to have real life work experience and job experience at certain types of facilities, being like, resort versus private versus public. So you get a feel of what you type of professional and who's the people that you want to cater to. Because ultimately your members and or your public become your family, basically, and you're running their leisure time. I mean, I'm a golf pro. I run people's leisure time, man. You know, that's what we do. So it's not like we're doing heart surgery or brain surgery, but it's, you know, people like their leisure time. They're entitled. They pay a lot of money to become members at certain places, and we want to service them to the highest level that we can. I'd like to, you know, when I travel to play other places, I see how great some facilities take care of me, and we make sure that we do the same thing. You've played my place; it's a very special spot, and it's it continues to improve. We have new superintendent hired 4 years ago, and he just the place is just immaculate. So we're very pleased, and we're in a very good spot. So very fortunate to be at this club.
It's a great club. I always get excited the night before. I could barely sleep when I play. I haven't been there in a couple of years. I will reach out again. It's just a wonderful experience. So you're a teaching pro and you have to teach really wide array of handicap levels. So what are some of the common mistakes that kind of the high handicappers make that you see right away that you need to fix?
Common mistakes. So I'm putting on my teaching professional hat here. Common mistakes are lack of balance, lack of understanding of what you're doing, poor fundamentals, grip, posture, ball position, all the stuff that you need to just start, you know, kind of swinging the golf club. And then the most common thing I think I see is people starting from the wrong area. They start hit at the driving range, and what they should start is at the hole and work themselves backwards. Earlier you can start with putting, move to chipping, move to pitching, move to bunkers, move to quarter swings, half swings, full swings, and then you have a complete game. At least, you know, proficient enough to go out and play any golf course. It might take you a few years to do that, but you're going to learn how to, you know, you learn the pressure that you got to put on the ball to make the ball travel a certain distance. And that's all we're doing. We have 14 different clubs that make the ball fly different flights. Some fly high really quick. Some fly higher later and they go farther. Some keep it on the ground. You just got to learn what shot when and how far the shots go and how to use your body. From the hole, I've come up with a system that basically from 5 yards and closer to the green that you're not using any legs or hips. And then when you get 6 yards and farther, you start to pivot a little bit and it chips and pitches. And, it becomes very regimented, and because you don't need loading and unloading of a club when you're hitting a little chip shot or a small pitch shot. You need stationary. You need the club to hit the ground in the right spot with the red ball aloft. So there's ways that you can teach people and coach them, bring them along faster. And that's why I give a ton of lessons. I mean, I'm booked through October, going into November. It's insane. I don't even have much an hour here, an hour there. They even slide people in now, which is great. But it's I feel bad for some of my students looking for time.
It's fascinating you say that from the whole back, and we talked about it earlier. I mean, I at my club, I see these kids go right to the range and just take the driver out first thing, and they just start crushing balls. And I guess, like we said before, it's just not as sexy, the short game. I mean, that's what I live for. When I think about great shots, I think about me. I watch one of your videos and make that ball land like a butterfly with sore feet.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, you know what? It's like, right, it's like, okay, here's picking up a club and going to the driving range of a driver your first time. I'm going to relate to something that everybody can understand. Right. You want to run for a marathon. You want to train for a marathon. Okay, you're going to do 25 miles that first day. Let's go. Come on. Let's go. 25 miles. We're going to do a marathon. We're going to run 25 miles. So let's do it today. That's like picking up the driver. You're going to start with the mile. You're going to start with the half mile. You know, you're going to build your stamina up. Golf swing is a full swing. It's a full motion. Okay. It goes from the ball all the way back and all the way through, right? What about all the stuff that's in between? What about a shot that goes that far? 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 So why are you passing up all the good juice inside and only learning how to hit it, and you're not even doing it right if you're going to just pick up a club anyway, because you have no idea, and it's the total wrong way to teach people. And if anybody has taken a lesson or is taking a lesson starting from the driving range backwards, get your money back, and learn from the hole forward, please. That's the way it works.
That's great advice. There's these young men that in my course, they hit the ball a mile, but my goodness, they can't even get close to getting up and down. They're getting sixes and sevens on holes. I'm way behind them, Rob, but I'm patient. I'm hitting 7 irons and, into the greens and, eights. And it's just very different, very, very different. One of my favorite quotes from Johnny Miller, they asked him, what club do you use for 100 yards? And his answer was all of them.
Yeah. I mean, where, how do you want the ball to fly? That's what we're talking about. The lower irons, you can hit a 5 iron 100 yards, but it's going to run a good portion of that 100 yards unless you're trying to fly at 100. Right. But if you're flying 100, it's going to run because
it's not going to hold.
Structure's going to be like this instead of
that. Rob, how do I stop my sway? I keep swaying when I don't twist and I sway. How do I stop that?
So the sway is you actually moving your body more than you need to going off the golf ball. When you stand over the golf ball, you're not trying to move into your right side. You're trying to swing the club back, and the ball's your body's going to coil because of that. You're actually trying to move to the right side, which causes the sway, and you're just adding pieces in. So it's like if I wanted to hit a small chip shot and I use a pitch swing, that's what you're doing. You're making the swing too big for what you need to do, which is why it breaks down. Sorry, Joe.
No, I appreciate that. And so, of course, you lose spine tilt and you lose all kinds of efficiencies there. And that's one of the main reasons why I don't hit as long as I can or should.
It all comes down to the club face, right? So the club face is what hits the ball. On an iron, that club face is 75% of the effect of the flight and the trajectory. 75%, just the face. Wood, it comes up to 85%. And people are thinking about their left arm and leg. Think about the club face. When you go out there and try to hit shots, think about the club face. Start small. Think about getting that club face on that ball rather than worrying about your left arm or your leg or your whatever to try to get, because that, what hits the ball? The club head. Your left arm doesn't do it. So you got to learn, again, from the hole backwards. And then all this stuff, you don't even have to ask those questions because you'll already understand them. It's kind of a funny way. Golf is just taught wrong from when people just, pick up that driver. Again, like you said, it's not as sexy, but you know what? Right. To learn skills, it's not sexy to run, half a mile, right? Sexy to run a marathon. But you got to start out with the half a mile, man. You know, anybody can run a half a mile. All right. Anybody can putt, but you know, to do it right, become really skilled at it. You know, you gotta figure it out.
It's such great advice. Now, we both, of course, have a mutual friend, Mr. Dean Lawson. He holds that great – he's down at the Yacht and Country Club there in Stuart, Florida. He has that tournament in his daughter's name every – we both have a soft spot for Breezy, his daughter, in February, in her honor, of course, what happened to her. Dean and his wife, Lauren, run that great tournament. We both love and admire both of them. But golf is full of those kinds of stories of just really great people with really great stories.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's the third largest industry in the world. You think about it, golf, third largest industry in the world. You start reaching out to, you know, Scott's Fertilizer and all the machine works that they do to build ball washers. I mean, it is the third largest industry on the planet, wow. Right? Think about that. So I own my entire life from the game of golf. I picked it up as a young kid at 4. I never looked back. I played a little bit of baseball until I was about 10 or 11, but once I got done with that little league, you know, town championship, I couldn't wait to get out and get on the golf course. And you know, it's just one of those things that, you know, everything that I've done in my life is attached to the game of golf, from my first wife to my second wife to my kids to my, I mean, it's just, everything is just attached to the game of golf, people through people, because of the game of golf. I don't think that there's many significant people that are in my life that weren't brought through the game of golf. It's just really weird. I know, right? I mean, I think about it all the time. I'm like, wow, that's how grand of a scope it has and the influence on my life. And you know, it's such a great sport. You can always get better, and you're never going to master it, you know, but you can always get better. That's what makes it so cool.
Absolutely. I'm kind of late to it. I've only been playing I played soccer all my life and some other sports, but I only came to about 15, 20 years ago. And yeah, I mean, I could play some of my best golf and then, you know, the next day just stink it up, Rob. I mean, it can be very frustrating, you know, but what I like about it most is that I can play it till I die, and it's very social. I love the attitude of not thinking about it too much between shots. I like that. I'm going to start incorporating that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only way to go about it. You're out there for 4.5 hours probably. And you know what? You want to do other things. Like, here's the funny part. Say you're, and we've all been paired with them. We play with a pair of the guys now, or a gal who's not playing too well. And they got the F-bombs going, and they got they're upset. They're walking around, their head's down, they're kicking the ground, they're talking to themselves, they're talking to the ball. All that wasted time, that or wasted emotion when they're walking to the balls, they're kicking themselves. How many times have you punched yourself in the face, Joe? Well, every time, you probably never have done that, but emotionally, you punch yourself in the face all the time, right? If you can stop that, you're going to become a way better golfer, because you have to be your best fan. Everybody else is going to try to kick you down.
Right.
You're going to be your best fan, so you got to talk to yourself like a champion. And if you do that, you're going to listen to yourself, and you're going to listen to yourself more. And then things don't become so big when you kind of forget about it. I mean, you hit a bad shot and you got a guy who hits a shot and he goes into left trees and he's walking for 3 minutes down to that ball and thinking about it and kicking himself and swearing at himself and worrying and throwing all those emotions into your body for 3 minutes.
Mm.
How often do you sit there and say, I'm going to really mess myself up for 3 minutes and kick myself down for 3 minutes? Let me just time this. Hold on a second. Okay, start now. Boy, Rob, you're an ass. Boy, never. So why do we do it when we play the game of golf? It's the craziest thing, right? So anyway, I find that fascinating.
It is fascinating. And, you know, I talked to a lot of people. My general theme is discipline, you know, because I feel that, you know, I lost a bunch of weight. I've done, you know, a bunch of things in my life. And always the foundation has been some kind of discipline. It started there. You know, how'd you lose 130 pounds? They're waiting for some secret answer. Like, you know, I climbed trees or something. No, I use discipline. I worked out and I stopped eating as much.
Right.
And exactly. That's right. So that comes into play so much in golf, maybe more than ever.
Logic is like the key, you know, as I get older, and I can only understand like myself as I'm unlocking the keys. I've done this my whole life, and I've listened to some of the top players. I've played with most of the top players on the planet, right? Even to date. And, you know, as you get more and more into this and see more and more people and you know, work on it yourself, it becomes simpler. I can only imagine like how Butch Harmon, who's seen even more, he's been on the planet, you know, 30 more years than I have and has done it as long as I have. So, I mean, imagine having all that extra knowledge. I mean, I've got 50 years of knowledge, right? Or 46 years of knowledge when I was four and started playing up until now. And then imagine having another 30 years of knowledge, how much simpler you can make it. So if you stay logical when it comes to the game, you don't kick yourself, okay? You got to stay logical. And things that, you know, the greatest thing that I like to hear is like if I'm giving a lesson to a new person and they know me right away. If they hit a shot and they immediately tell themselves, oh, I picked up on that one. You know, no, you didn't. What does that even mean, you picked up on that one? You didn't pick up the ball. What does that mean, you picked up on that? But people say it all the time. And they tell themselves, they convince themselves that they picked up on that one. It means nothing. And it's probably not what they did wrong. And I guarantee 99.9% of the time, it's not. There might be one time where someone may have stood up on, but it's not. And then they tell themselves misinformation, and then they try to figure it out from misinformation.
Wow.
So good luck. I mean, good luck. Here's golf. I'm going to give you an envelope, and we're going to build you this beautiful swing. And I'm going to give you all this information in this envelope marked A, and it's the great information that's going to lead to that beautiful swing, okay? And I've got this other envelope B, and I'm going to give you all that same good information that I gave you in envelope A, but I'm going to throw in a lot of crappy information too, like just stuff that doesn't mean anything. And I'm going to give you both these things. If I give you two Joe Pinones, right? If I give one guy, if I give one A and one B, and you guys are the same, who's going to figure out first? The guy who has all the correct information without all that information, that's all the crappy information. And that's what, you know, as golf instructors, you got to sift through all that BS that's out there. And you got to just make people believe that it's very easy. It's very simple, but you have to stick to certain rules and it'll become easier. Now, it's not an easy game per se, because you know, there's a lot of things you have to learn, but if you learn it again from the hole backwards, I have two children, well, three now, but two that are very skilled already, an 8-year-old that's very skilled and an 18-year-old that's super skilled. And I started them both from the hole backwards. So to this day now, my son cannot play for 3 or 4 weeks. He just started LSU and he could not play for 3 or 4 weeks. I could throw a ball down and say, okay, hit a 15-yard wedge shot and he'll 15 yards. You know, whereas you just start somebody from, you know, hitting a golf ball first and I say, okay, here's a 15-yard wedge shot. They're going to look at you like you're on another planet. They're going to say, I have no idea what to do. Wow. There's skills that you, right? Because there's skills and you build on them. You build from the smallest motion possible, just keeping everything still, and you build off that. And if you can do that, then you become a proficient golfer. If you can't do that, then we've got to figure out a way to make sure that you understand, you know, how it works from the hole backwards.
Such great advice. Sometimes I play with these gentlemen that are, you know, a little bit higher handicappers, you know, and they're asking me, you got any tips? You got any advice? You know, I think my left hand is out of position, you know, and I said, you know, I'm not good enough to give any lessons, but I would say, just hit the ball, hit it. Just hit it, man. Just hit it. Stop thinking so much and just hit it. Will you just hit it? You know, they stand over the ball for a long time, and I don't mean to pick on high handicappers, but, by the way, I don't mind high scoring. Slow play is what I mind. You know, keep it moving.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Also, you know, it's not the high handicaps. When you're standing over a ball for a long time, you're thinking about a lot of things, many things. You're running over your checklists, and you're like, oh, okay, head down, left arm straight, ball back, left. I mean, it's like, no, because you want to make sure you do all that information. You got your 40 seconds. You do all. You look at it. You see where the flag is. You see the wind. You got the lie. When it becomes skilled, and then you're either hitting it, you're either closing the face, or you're either keeping the face open, or you're trying to feel that face pretty square, depending on what type of shot you're hitting. And then you just pull the trigger and you go. Wherever it lands, if you hit it in a bunker, if you hit it 3 feet, if you hit it 15 feet, who cares? Because you've got to go up there and do the same thing again. Nothing changes that it's in the bunker or it's in the fair or on the green. Nothing changes. Time doesn't stop. The green, the sky doesn't turn green. You know, if you miss the green, nothing changes. You just got to go up there, forget about it, keep yourself calm like this. And then you got to have the skills to go up and pick that next shot and be able to do it. And that's why, again, starting from the hole backwards, right? Now you missed a green. So what? You have the skills to get it up and down.
It's everything. When I dream of golf at night, which I often do, I'm always thinking of, you know, those little chips that come up and snuggle up to the ball, and those little floaters, and those excite me. The, you know, from back, it's important to me, but it's not as exciting as short. And I'm at the short tripping range, you know, short chip range all the time. And people like, Joe, what do you, you know, but I enjoy it. I enjoy it. And the whole backwards is a really, really, even when you warm up, right? Now, when you warm up for any of those rounds, how do you do it? Where do you start? Do you start putting?
Start with putting green, sure. Yeah, start with putting green. Well, my warm-up starts actually on my body first before I even do anything. I have a few things. I got about an hour stretching. I got a Viper that I use. I do a lot of mobility in every plane, so I can move every plane backwards, forwards, up, down, all that stuff. And then I get out there, and I'll start with putting. And I generally start with 3, 6, and 9 footers. I have a little putting mat that a great putting coach a few weeks ago gave me called the Vizio, which I use for about 10 minutes in my warm-up. It kind of just gets my path good and my setup the same every time. And then, you know, I just start with 3, 6, and 9 footers. And I always count off every putt that I hit, no matter what it is, who it is. Before I hit it, I want to know how far it is.
Really?
Well, yeah. Why would you not want to know that information? You're in the middle of the fairway. You got to know how far it is to the flag. Why do you not want to know how far the putt is? Especially when you got to know if I got a 4 footer, 12 footer, 19 footer, 36 footer, 44 footer. You got to know this stuff because your stroke is going to become that size to hit the ball that distance. Logical, right?
Very interesting. So you pace it off with your feet.
Every putt. Every pace that I take, right, is 3 feet or a yard. And that's the way it worked out. Is, you know, I just count up in threes when I'm on the green, 3, 6, 9, 12, I got a 12 footer. It's downhill. It's breaking right to left. Let myself gather the information, read the grain, hit the putt. Wherever the putt goes, if I make it, great. Hit it 12 feet. If I miss it on the high side and it goes 3 feet by, I don't say anything to myself except I hit that ball 15 feet. I don't say I missed it. I don't say I hit the ball 15 feet. What do I got left? Yeah, 3 footer left. What's my next shot? I go over there and I got to hit 3 footer in. You know, you can't. Give yourself the right information because then your brain will accept it and believe you. If you tell yourself, oh, God, I hit it too hard. I can't believe it. You know, now all of a sudden you're doubting yourself. So what are you going to do over that 3 footer? You're going to get over that thing and say, wow, I'm a good putter? No, you just mentally punched yourself in the face again. Right. Instead of just getting over the 3 footer and knowing that you've hit a million 3 footers and putting it just like you do every other 3 footer. There's a way of mentally just doing it. Yeah, trust me. It's a lifelong thing that I've learned, but it's definitely helping.
It takes discipline. Yeah. Rob, absolute delight. I love her. I respect you so much, and I hope we get together soon. Love to see you. I'll be down in Tampa, by the way, for the winter since I'm empty nest now. Perhaps when you go play TPC, we'll hook up there and get out some nice courses there. But
yeah, perfect. Thank you. I'll be preparing. Yeah, my pleasure.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. That's it. I can get Old Memorial. You ever play Old Memorial there?
Of course. Yeah. I played the pro member there this year. Love that place. It's awesome.
I've got a really good friend there. I love it there too.
Well, let's make sure if we're down in the Tampa area, and we'll make sure you call your friend, I'll call mine. We'll get a game.
Rob, thanks so much for your time. So how can people get in touch with you? You've got a lot of great content on your website, on YouTube. What are some ways in Instagram? How can we get in touch with you?
Well, first of all, watch Joe Pannone's show here. So, you know, once you do that, then you figure it all out. But a couple different avenues. Instagram. I'm a little active on Instagram.
Yeah, you are.
LinkedIn. Throw some Facebook stuff. I got some Facebook pages out there. Let me see what else. What else am I missing? Hold on a second.
Your actual website.
I've got the website. Yep. I got the website too, which is, you know, needs to be a little bit updated, but it's still pretty good. I do a little bit of Twitter, and I don't do really any Snapchat, but go to my website, look it up, Rob Labritz online. The website will come up first. You can contact me right through that. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, want to talk golf, need a lesson, need a pro to travel, whatever you need, I'm here to do it and spread the word of golf.
Absolutely. And when you go to your site, you'll see your incredibly impressive career. Rob Labritz, thank you so much. And shout out to our good friend, Dean Lawson. I hope we get to see him soon too. Hope he's well.
Dino, shout out to you. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate you giving me the time.
Talk to you soon. You be well. Bye now.
All right, buddy. See you later.
Thank you for listening and or viewing Joey Pins Discipline Conversations. Please share this episode with one or two of your friends who you think may benefit from the episode. Our website, www.joeypins.com. There you find lots of resources and you could join our mailing list. Please follow us on all our social media, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Podcast information, the video version of our podcast is on YouTube. Please subscribe. Audio is on all major podcasting platforms. Please follow them. And if you like it, please consider giving 5-star rating. Would really appreciate that. Would you like to financially support the podcast? You can go to our Patreon site. Consider $5, $10, or $20 a month. There's all kind of plans that we have there. It's like a one-time payment. What is this podcast episode worth to you? $25, $50, $100, $500, $1,000, $5,000. You be the judge. You can go to our PayPal account to do that as well. Thank you again for listening or watching Joey Pins Discipline Conversations.